Welcome back to Conscious Success, the podcast where we teach you how to master your mind, expand your wealth, and enhance your health. I'm your host, Madhu, and today I'm joined by a very dear friend, Radhika Das, who is not only one of the most inspirational kirtan chanters in the world, in my opinion, and as well as in the opinions of many hundreds of thousands everywhere you go, but what he's bringing to us today, aside from the practical ways to engage in spirituality, what is kirtan, how to use it to improve your life, we're talking about how to use experiences in your life where you hit rock bottom, where you break your heart, as a springboard to actually achieve the life that you want. How do we achieve success through humility? And how do you do what you want while still being a spiritualist and do it in a sustainable way so you can live your full life free from fear? Check this out. I'm always excited for these conversations, but I'm uniquely excited because not only have we been pals for the last 10 years or so, but I've gotten to personally, with my own eyeballs, witness you going from an absolutely awesome, amazing human helping people to just amplifying that up times 1,000, maybe 5,000. Like, I don't know what the actual quantifiable is, but when I think of you, I think of somebody who has gained some success in this world off of service. Because literally what you do is you travel around and help anyone who's interested take steps in their spiritual life through mantra music, mantra meditation. And I'm just uniquely excited to hear how you've been able to do that, because, correct me if I'm mistaken, it wasn't a very easy journey.
No, I've done events where there's like one person in the audience, like five people in the audience, 10 if I'm lucky. And I did that for a consistent 2 or 3 years. Mm. So I know what it means to not have that audience. So now that it is there, I'm like incredibly grateful, deeply moved and humbled that things are happening despite my efforts. It's not because of me. There's something greater at play. And that's been just magical to witness. Really magical.
For those not familiar, what is a general attendance for your events nowadays?
Well, on a Friday night in London, and a nice quaint studio will sell out at about 150. And the biggest we've done this summer was at a festival called Medicine Fest, where there were about 5,000 in the audience. So anywhere in between there, it's what we're used to nowadays.
All exclusively kirtan, correct?
Yeah, kirtan, mantra meditation.
Maybe break that down. Most of you listening are going to be familiar with kirtan, but for those who aren't, maybe give us a little
bite-sized version. So kirtan literally comes from the root word kirt, which means to praise and to glorify. But what are we glorifying? What is the subject matter of that glorification, that praise? There's a divine element. There's also the glorification of the true self, the spiritual self, and an understanding that the true self, the bird within the cage, so to say, is connecting with its master, its owner, its person of love.
I will encapsulate that and probably use that as my definition of kirtan going.
And then it's fun as well. It's music, it's dancing, it's joyous celebration. It takes a minute to learn and makes you feel just as good, just as fast. So, I mean, I could say tons about kirtan, but I thought I'd just give you like a minute spiel there.
So a bite-sized version. Yeah, I mean, well, of course it helps. And you know, the cool thing is everyone likes music. There's no one in the world. If somebody says, I don't like music, it's just like scary. Leave that room, you know? Right.
I know a friend that doesn't like pizza. And that for me is like, what?
Why do you still call him friend? No. it's like, you know, there's certain things that are just, you have to dig.
Yeah.
And it's intrinsic as a human to like music. And so specifically with kirtan, and as you present it, you share music with mantras in such a way as hundreds, if not thousands of people come together and we chant. And it's quite entrancing, to say the least. For those who haven't experienced kirtan yet, it's like, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't tried kirtan, like pause it right now, actually, as important as this is, pause it, go look up kirtan, go look up Radhika Das's kirtan, and we'll share some of that here shortly as well. But and get familiar with it, because this is actually how we get connected 12 years ago or so in India.
Yeah.
Randomly.
I met this guy in a field in India.
Literally, just randomly.
He was wearing saffron robes. And I was like, mind blown that a dude like him was walking the fields of India in holy places.
Like a little white bald guy with robes just walking around. Right. Literally, we met as if magically. And we got connected immediately through Kirtan. And
he's a nice guy, right? I mean, who doesn't want to connect with Madhu?
I paid him to say that. Well, it's cool because I, from that time, 12 years ago, to actually see, and we've done kirtans around the world sometimes with 8 people, you know, in London, many years ago.
I remember
200, that. Even last night, we just did a beautiful event. Hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple hundred people.
Yeah, in LA.
Yeah.
And so those not familiar with kirtan, you have to get familiar with kirtan. And I say that because not only is it the most important practice in my life, and nothing competes with, like, nothing is a close to the amount of spiritual experience I've had during kirtan or mantra meditation, chanting mantra, call and response. But more important than just doing it is having a proper facilitator, a proper leader, somebody who can present it in a way that's accessible and palatable, where you go, I get it, and it doesn't freak me out. But also, just, it's awesome that you're a great musician. And you've been studying music in your adult life for years now.
I mean, I don't know about studying music, but I was forced into piano lessons as a child. And I mean, I really didn't enjoy them. It was painful for me to rock up to the teacher's house. And I used to look at my mom and just, I remember saying to mom, do we have to? Yeah. Like, can I just skip this week? I'm not feeling so well. And so I got up to what's known as grade 5. There's like grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And at the grade 5 exam, I walked into the room and started playing my own music. And the examiner looked at me after I'd finished playing and said, that was nice, but that wasn't the piece that was in front of you, and immediately failed me. So I walked out and I knew I'd failed. There was no question of passing that grade 5. And so my mom asked me on the way home, so how'd it go? And I said, yeah, I failed. And I think I'm done with it now. Like, I think I'm done with learning music. And only did it make its resurgence when I found kirtan and I found mantra meditation. I found a way to dovetail that skill for higher purpose to allow me to express my heart to, a greater being, God, supreme person, divine person. And that's where I felt like it was all providence that Mom sent me to piano lessons so I could do this. This is the whole reason. So I'm grateful. Thanks, Mom. I don't know if you're going to watch this. Appreciate you sending me to piano lessons.
So I want to hear more about that transition because you were just a normal kid doing your thing. And then what inspired you or inclined you in the direction to trying kirtan, opening your mind to kirtan?
Well, there was a retreat in 2010 that a famous monk who I shall not name, but I think many of you will already know, invited me to, and I remember going begrudgingly. I'd kind of decided I'd give it a shot because this monk was very charming. And I went on the retreat, didn't really attend very much because I felt out of place. It is a very bewildering experience to enter into spiritual communities because there's a certain lingo at play, a dress code at play, there's practices that are unspoken of. And so I felt very out of place as a teenage boy. Well, it was like early adulthood. And on one of the penultimate nights, there was a kirtan happening. And I sat at the back of the room because I was like, real men don't sing. You know, what's this singing business? This isn't real spirituality. I thought you meant to meditate in silence. So I'm sitting at the back of the room and I get a text message from my girlfriend at the time, and it said in no uncertain words, it's over. And my heart was broken. Like, yeah, everyone was dancing and I was like, they're on something. Something's in the incense or something in the room. Everyone's feeling something else, but I was completely isolated in this bubble. I remember feeling as though my world was crumbling around me. You know, imagine your love, the person that you love the most in that moment has just texted you saying it's over. And I remember thinking to myself, I got two options. I can either try and make this work via text, which, by the way, wasn't working because I was in some Spanish hills and there was no reception, no signal. So I was like, I either try and make it work. And every time I tried to click, you know, 3 times furiously on a number to try and get a letter, you know, those Nokia 3310s, which you had to click like furiously to get any kind of words out. And I remember, okay, try and fail, and it would kept failing, message sent failure, or I could go to my room and cry. Those are my two options. Or maybe I stay in this kirtan and surrender a little bit, let go, and maybe give this a chance. And there's a photo of me that I'll never let anyone see the light of day. It will never resurface. No, you cannot have this photo. It's me with my hands raised up in the air, tears coming from my eyes, and I was wearing a really tight yellow t-shirt that wasn't made for my figure. And, you know, when you raise your hands and the t-shirt raises, and so it's like scandalously high over my belly. And I remember every time I look at this photo, I just think, this is a happy person. And so after that experience, I ran up to the facilitator of that particular kirtan and just was bombarding him with questions. And as it happens, the girlfriend became my wife. Mm. The facilitator of that kirtan became my spiritual teacher. And 15, 20 years later, I'm trying to give that experience to others to help them feel a sense of a spiritual shelter. From piano lessons to sharing kirtan. Quite the journey.
You find this phenomenon all the time where it's like, okay, I was chilling. Life was all right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it wasn't. And then that breaking point is what inclined you to, I mean, I had a similar experience where
we learn more from rock bottom than we do from mountain tops. And I think many times people see success as a linear line from here to there and it's upward trajectory. Usually success looks a bit like this. Mm. It's still upward trajectory, but there's a lot of dips, ups and downs along the way. And accepting that there's going to be hardship is a big part of becoming resilient in becoming successful. I think we give up too easily because of a lack of discipline or a lack of desire or a lack of tolerance for this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And generally, if we're consistent in our efforts and we're sincere with a purpose, then I've seen that most people, if not all people who are consistent and sincere with their efforts, will make it, will find a level of success. It may not be to the level you want it to be, but you will find success. What do you think?
I couldn't say it any better myself.
Really?
Well, here's what I would say is that you mentioned these two, let's say, factors, like sincerity and consistency, which I think are a really beautiful way to consolidate this idea that you can't lose anyway. And even if you don't hit the ultimate goal,
at least
you're still going to move in the right direction. Yeah. It's like a shoot for the stars, you'll at least make it out of the park. There's this idea that
shoot just for the moon, you land among the stars.
Yeah. And so what I'm inspired by with you specifically is, not only do you have such a just happy and jolly and inspiring
sometimes.
This charisma, but more than that, it's you know, you went from that guy in the back of the room that was just like, no, you know, I can kind of pick, knowing you, I can picture it in the back, just like kind of cynically rolling your eyes or whatever it might be, to the guy who's now, you know, sharing with hundreds of thousands of people around the world, kirtan. And as you mentioned, it's not for the faint of heart for the first time they walk into mantra. It's like, what is happening here? Sure. It's fun. Some people who have more of an open heart might go, oh, this is entertaining. This is lively. I kind of want to dance. Yeah. But it's almost like...
Yeah, I'm not aiming at the girl that loves kirtan. I'm aiming for the boyfriend she dragged along. Like my narrative and the way I speak and try to access people is aiming for the boyfriend. That was like, oh man, I'm just coming because my girlfriend really wants to do this. Because I remember being that dude. Guy. I remember being that guy. And if we just focus on anyway, this is making things accessible and relevant if you're interested in that kind of stuff, then aim at the lowest common denominator. Aim at the person that is not even ready to go halfway there. Hmm. Because if you can bring that person halfway, then the people that are already halfway will be, wow, you know?
Yeah, to be automatic. Yeah. I love that. It's like you carry from the bottom, and then the weight will be bared.
Yeah,
you bear the weight more when it bore the weight. Yeah,
that's community building 101.
Interesting.
You know, focus your efforts on the people that are on the fringes.
And it's not like you have to say be at rock bottom or be suffering. I mean, for sure, if you're not there. Learn now, because if you don't learn now, it's just a matter of time till you hit rock bottom and have to learn that way.
Right.
So it's not that you have to be there, but it puts one in a humble situation. And you know, you also, one thing I appreciate about you whenever we spend time, whenever you present, is people say, great job. You're like, yeah, thanks. My teachers did a great job teaching me, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And there's this mood, and, you know, even we've had people respond in our podcast before, like, you know, oh, is that weird? You know, take the credit. You should take the credit. Like, yes, you're also a great teacher, but you should take the credit. And sure, whatever. But that's whether you want to take the credit or not. Yes, you are a vessel. You are an instrument.
Yeah.
But regardless of whether you take the credit or not, I've always appreciated how you give credit where credit's due. And I find that humility is the key that actually allows that lock to be on.
It's a safe place to be, in my opinion, especially as someone that's trying to share spirituality and trying to build spiritual communities. I think the safest place for someone who wants to do that as well, or even build anything that's successful in spirituality, has to be centered around the pillar of humility. And I think sometimes we get that concept wildly wrong. People think humility means to think less of yourself. I'm so crap. I'm so lowly. I'm like, you know, the dude that let everyone trample over me. You know, that's what people think humility is. Humility doesn't mean to think less of yourself. It means to think about yourself less, to be more empathetic towards people, to be more considerate of the G person, the God, to give more space and time and bandwidth, mental bandwidth, to think about someone else other than ourselves. We want to sit at the front of the bus, at the back of the cinema, but in the center of attention at all times. You know, we want people to love us. And that's natural. You know, Mother Teresa says that it's innate for each and every one of us to love and be loved. It's innate. But at the same time, I think the excess is also not healthy. That when you do receive a lot of appreciation, don't reject it. Don't say, no. But let it flow through you, like you said. And, you know, one of the things I do is I just picture sometimes that my spiritual teacher standing right beside me, behind me. I'm just letting it flow straight through me. And it's just such a safe place to be. I feel like otherwise I'm going to get clobbered. Like if my head gets too big, it's a good size for any kind of person to come and give it a whack, you know?
If you've ever considered having a podcast, especially if you're expert at what you do, I cannot suggest more highly using Podigy's service, which is what we use. If you like this production here, I highly suggest you reach out to Podigy through their contact in the show notes below to run and host your podcast. I went through a bunch of different teams, tried a bunch of different things. No one came close to what I got post-production from Podigy, and even just making a launch easy, taking your content, sharing it, making it presentable. Please check out Podigy. If you're great at what you do and you've ever considered having a podcast, I really am excited for you to try them out as well. I like this, like you have to be conductive, right? Different,
like, to be conductive.
Like different metals conduct electricity different. And like you said, you know, connecting with God. And if you guys don't like that word, I don't care. We're talking about the same.
G word, supreme, divine, universal truth.
The highest of all high powers. Whatever high power you think of, the thing that's higher than that.
Yeah.
And until you get to the top, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so connecting with that, sometimes talking about like there's that source of electricity. There's the outpost of electricity. And so in the way is you connect with others who are plugged into the wall, plugged into source, and then you just make yourself conductive.
Be a conduit.
A conduit, yeah, so that you can actually say, take that real energy, which, because it's not coming from us anyway. It's a mistake people think, I'm a healer. No, you facilitate healing.
Yeah.
I'm fill in the blank. No, you facilitate that. It's coming from, it's all a blessing, and become the best instrument or the best conduit to then share that out with others.
It's a safe place to be. It's not even about trying to be fake about it, but it's just a really safe place to conduct. And okay, spiritual things aside, even as someone that has material goals, a safe place to be is to try and fly below the radar. If you're on the radar constantly thinking that you've done something, you become an easy target for anything negative to attract itself to you as well. You're attracting all sorts of stuff to you. And as someone that's aiming for success, you're also going to attract energy vampires. People are going to suck energy from you, want to bring you down. And if you just are a little bit, it's not being tactful, being intelligent about where you position yourself and how you position yourself. I think it just means that you're going to save yourself a bumpy ride.
No. Yeah. And I like you said, so humility is not to think less of yourself, it's to think of yourself less.
Yeah.
And oftentimes a definition I like, which is very complimentary to that, is humility is just seeing the world realistically.
Right.
It's like we're just like tiny little entities that need lots of help. Yeah. Like from everything around us.
Right.
Even though we're the apex predators in the world, we're only that because we have a prefrontal cortex, which allows us to think and operate and build buildings and things to keep us safe. But if you put us in the wild, we're fragile. These, like, we got thin skin.
We're the only species that has to look after its babies for like 10 years before it can do stuff on their own.
Yeah, like minimally.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
trust me, I know.
Yeah, you've got
bunch two little kids, cute as can be, running around, but don't know the head from the butt. It's really interesting.
And when you see that, though, and it's like, oh yeah, how could you see what we are realistically and not be humbled by it, and not be like, oh yeah, I'm just a tiny little entity doing my best. But then, the way that we be empowered, like you said, is we might be small, but even if you just have a tiny little conductive piece of metal that plugged to the source, then in this way you can be connected to the supreme source of all power.
Yeah, and connected to the supreme source, but also like not afraid of making mistakes.
Mm.
If we're really proud, one of the signs of being really proud is that you're scared to take steps in any direction that is, not firm ground. And, sometimes in a pursuit of success, in a pursuit of wanting to be great, you have to take risks and you have to be willing to go the untrodden path. And humility helps so much in doing that, because you're like, I'm going to mess it up anyway. So what's the harm? Let me give it a shot. But if you're really proud about any achievement you've made, then the chances you're going to go, no, I'm going to stay where I am, because this is safe ground. I know what my operating field is. I'm good at this. But then there's no growth there. Growth. So humility helps growth.
Yeah, growth happens outside of that comfort zone.
I think so.
You may think of this idea that if you're scared of growth, imagine how scary it is to stay where you are.
Right. Wow. That's a good line.
It's like choose your fear. There's nothing in this world that's not worthy of a little bit of. Fear. Fear's good. People go, oh, never feel fear. No, it's like there's some things in this world to be afraid of, but it's a matter of managing that and being in control of that. And, and I've seen you, especially being that we're in the same kind of community, it elicits a lot of criticism. And a lot of people would shy away from the kind of success and the kind of as many eyeballs in the world that are on you. And they don't. They might even think, oh, I don't want that because, oh, you get all the haters, all the trolls. I see those comments, and it's a razor's edge of just doing what you're doing and being able to handle the, I'm laughing because just I only have a modicum of what you have, but like it's hard taking the amount of hate, taking the amount of criticism, and it's the fear of, can I handle that? It's like, yeah, whatever. Just like you have to become bigger than the problem. You're either smaller than the problem and it overwhelms you, or you're bigger than the problem. And you specifically, you take up the space. I love it. You're like, I'm here. I'm doing it. My gurus, my teachers tell me to do this. So I'm here and I'm going to serve.
Yeah.
And it's challenging sometimes to do that, to do something big in a spiritual space, because people project, oh, you should be simple. You should be this, should. They're kind of should all over, people who want to be successful.
should all over you.
And, how could you be successful, this, that, the other, and be a spiritualist? What are the parameters or the suggestions you have for somebody who's like, okay, I'm a spiritualist, like you and I, who we're more of spiritualists than anything else, but we also want to be successful. How do you be spiritual, live in a spiritual community, and also strive for success?
It's a fantastic question. I would say oftentimes when it comes to spiritual principles, spiritual behaviors, spiritual characteristics, we often throw the baby out with the bathwater. And hear me out. When you bathe the baby, you let all the dirty water go after the bathing's done, but you don't throw your own baby out. In the same way, these principles, live simply, you mentioned, be humble, be tolerant. How do those work with success and fulfilling ambition? You can take the principles and apply them still. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Keep the principles. So if it means being simple, maybe simplify the way in which you think about others. Maybe simplify your... It doesn't mean wear robes and sleep on the floor. But simplicity is still the principle. The detail is how you apply it. And so I think the principles are still very much alive. You know, tolerance. You can still be tolerant as a business owner. You can still be tolerant as a spiritualist. How you do that may differ. And that's where we all get hung up, because people think that the detail needs to be identical. Everyone needs to be the same tolerant on all the same, or everyone needs to be the same simple, right? But it's the same with like fasting. Like most spiritual traditions have fasting. And oftentimes people think fasting is always to do with food. I'm like, yes, it can be to do with food, but it can also be maybe a fast from technology. And that's not me saying that. One of my teachers, Kadamba Kananaswamy, he was the one that shared it. And I was like, this is incredible. Applying the principle to different details can mean that you can still derive the same benefits from those principles. You might apply them differently. You might apply them differently. You might not shave your head, live in a temple, eat on the floor, sleep on the floor, wake up at 5 a.m., but the same principles apply. You just have to think about how they can be applied to your particular situation. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't throw the principles out just because you're striving for success in a different way that other spiritualists perhaps are. Mm. You know, we're in a unique category, I reckon, because we don't wear robes. We're not in the temple. We're doing stuff outside of the temple environment. And so that means we got to be intelligent about how we apply those same principles. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, it is, as you were eloquently presenting, delicate.
It's delicate.
And how to do
it's
that
delicate,
because
it's
like, how do you translate
I'm gonna make
something,
mistakes,
you know? Yeah.
So you gotta be humble about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, perfect. Expect it. We just say a mistake is just a missed take. Let's just do another take. A mistake is just a missed
take. This guy's
take.
Made for podcasting.
I'm made for soundbites. Yeah, I'm my little cheesy one-liners. Yeah, and it's delicate because this whole podcast is so that you don't have to shave your head, throw on robes, and go move into a monastery.
If you don't want to. Know?
If you don't want to, of course. And if you do, maybe you don't need to after listening to this content.
Maybe.
But the idea is that wherever you're at, there's some option for you. And this is one thing I've always liked about the philosophy we practice, bhakti yoga, which is there's always an access point. Mm. There's always the ideal. Everyone knows, okay, that's the pole star. Like, we know what direction we're moving in. But there's a ladder. It's like, okay, you're here, this is what you do. You're here, this is what you do. Mm. Even I was just reading this morning, and one of my I would say it's my favorite chapter of the Bhagavad Gita.
The Song of God.
Yes. Those listening by now, you'll be acquainted, if not, pause this, go get the Bhagavad Gita.
Look on Amazon.
And get it. And specifically get the Gita as it is.
But don't leave it as it is on the shelf once you bought it.
Okay? See, I'm not the only one getting these. and I was reading the 12th chapter today, which gives this step ladder. So it says, you know, okay, ideally fully fix your mind on the Supreme and be always connected. You can't do that, no problem. Practice that.
Right.
You can't do that, no problem. Start to engage in your actions in a way that's for the betterment for you and for others around the world. You can't do that, renounce the fruits of those actions or the results of the things you do in this world. You can't do that, meditate. You can't do that, acquire some knowledge. And so there's a way in which it just says, wherever you're at, there's an option to make, to give you that next step in your spiritual trajectory, in your spiritual life.
It's not all or nothing. I think oftentimes we see perfection and we look at it and go, I don't even think I'm going to make it. And so we don't make any step. There's a story I love telling. Can I tell a story?
I insist.
So there was a person that really wanted to see gold in their lifetime. So they went to the royal family and they asked, do you mind showing us your treasury? I really want to see gold. I'm an elderly person. I'm going to pass soon. Do you mind if I see? It's a dream. I just want to see it once. And so the royal family said, yeah, of course, just climb the stairs to the right, go all the way to the top, open the door, swing it open. You'll see our treasury. So he does that. He starts climbing these stairs, gets halfway and goes, nah, this is too much. But remembers his desire, remembers his resolve, keeps going, makes it to the top, swings the door open, sees gold as far as the eye can see, and then does a double take and looks at all the steps upon which they'd just trodden and sees that every single step was laden with gold. And I think oftentimes when it comes to spiritual success or material success, whatever that definition is for you, oftentimes we think so much about the end goal, the perfection, that we forget that every step was golden. Hmm. You know, every single activity consciously performed in spiritual life is not a waste of time. You're making progress. And so let's celebrate and value progress more than perfection. And if we can do that for others, we'll start internalizing it. That which comes out of our mouth starts to go into our own brain because we love the sound of our own voice. We all as human beings love the sound of our own voice. So the more we celebrate other people's progress, the more we'll start to celebrate our own internally. And I think that's more powerful than perfection and reaching a pinnacle.
Mm. It's like the way you do one thing is the way you do everything.
Straight up.
Mm. So just do it for yourself, which as you mentioned, you'll like the sound of your voice over anyone else's anyway. And therefore, in this way, as you start to create that new neural circuitry, those new patterns, it will become more natural and easy to progress
it's
in that
practice.
Direction.
It's
yeah. Well, you also, it's cool to listen to you say this because anyone could read a book and have some ideas, but it's different when somebody lives this life. Because you live the life in many ways where that, actually, you live the life many people want in so many ways because you set your life in such a way where you worked hard for a long time to, you built up something beautiful that supports you and your family in a way that you now spend your time serving. First of all, who does that? When people get in your situation where they're like, okay, bases are covered and now what do I do with my freedom? I'm going to go golfing. Nothing against golfers, but like, it's like, and you're like, okay, I'm going to spend as much time with my family. And you also, I mean, that's another glorification of like, whenever you're not out doing your service and like helping and sharing kirtan, you immediately go home and spend time. You don't dilly dally. That's another amazing thing. But my main point is that you spend your free time going out and sharing kirtan. It's so counterintuitive. People think, oh, once I have it all, then I could just sit on a beach and sip my lemonade, whatever it might be. I want to hear from you. Why in the heck would someone like yourself who put some grit into building a life that supports you and your family want to spend your free time taking 10, 15, 20, 30 hour flights? We were just talking about a 24 hour flight you had to do
I'm
to
tired,
serve.
People.
Yeah, you are tired, but you do this anyway. Mm. How in the heck is this so nourishing and joyful that in your free time, this is what you decide to do?
Can I be totally honest with you?
Please.
If you start to see the love that has been poured into you from so many, and you acknowledge that it's taken a village to get me to the point that I'm at, it's not my own efforts. My efforts are there. I worked relatively hard, but there are so many that I can mention here that have brought me to this point that if I don't then share that love with others, I'll feel like I did a disservice to all the people that helped me along the path. That's one thing. And the other is, all of the hardship is worth it when you see the heart transforming. You feel slightly different. It's serving others and trying to bring people to a higher consciousness, which is what one of my aims is so fulfilling. It really, the process works. And I'm nowhere near what I really want to be and who I want to be. I make tons of mistakes. My wife is so tolerant. My children are so tolerant of me always gallivanting and trying to share. And I'm not perfect in that arena. I've got to do some work there. But they also see that it's also changing my heart little by little. So recognizing that you've been invested with love, and tasting and experiencing the process of spirituality working on you means that you can't stop. You just feel, I have to do something about this. I'd feel that if I didn't take this opportunity, I'll grow old and cold. Mm. That, I didn't try. I didn't give it my best shot. And let me tell you guys, I'm making a ton of mistakes while I'm on my way. I'm not at all perfect. I'm making so many mistakes. I'm sure you could all critique me for something with it. I know I'm making mistakes. But I want to encourage every single person that's listening right now to do what you need to do to live a life less ordinary, because it's flipping worth it, you know? It's really worth it. You'll feel so fulfilled and you'll change tons of lives in the process. So that's my why, I guess. A couple of whys for me, why I do what I do.
It's like the fuel is gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, to, I mean, nice. I can't oversimplify what you just said, but because it's just, I wouldn't even want to shorten it and consolidate it, but there's a way in which you're fueled by gratitude for those who've poured into you,
for sure.
And served you, or
yeah, they've helped me,
allowed you to have what you have and given you the gifts that you have. And simultaneously, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting.
Yeah.
You've seen the difference. Maybe a more mundane examples. I hate working out. I like do it. And every time, you know, some people are like, oh, you do it enough. And then you're like, you fall. I'm like, after all these years, I'm still, every time I'm like, I gotta go work out.
I don't work out, you know, so you're doing better than me.
Well, it's a different kind of workout. And, and you know, there's a way in which it's like, every time you lift, it's like, ugh, this is, you know, the mind complains and all that. But then when you see when you feel the results, you're like, oh, this is undeniably working. And, you know, it's visual. And in your case, it's, to your point, I should say, when you feel the difference of spiritual life and you know the difference it's making, you see yourself responding to life more consciously. You see yourself not reacting in the same way you might have in the past.
There's behavior, you know? But it's also like, I want to be blunt. I feel like I'm seeing God. And not how I thought I'd see. Like, I thought I'd see a little blue boy with a flute named Krishna running around, you know, in my life. I'm not seeing that, but I'm definitely seeing his hands in my life. Like pushing this, pulling that, moving this, moving that, slapping me a few times to make me realize, oh, be a little bit more personal, man. Stop being so impersonal with people. Even though there's so many people that now want your attention, this is something I'm dealing with, to be more personal. And even with you, like, I want to apologize because I've been here in LA for the last few days, but this is the first time I'm actually looking you deep in the eye and saying, thank you for being you. Thank you for being my life. Thank you for being a brother in my life. Because I'm still learning. And that's the slap I'm getting right now. Like, be more personal. Be more present with the people that you're being with. So that's what I mean by it's working. Like, I'm feeling, yeah, I'm feeling my God's presence in my life. And I urge you, like, every single person that's listening right now, if you're at all inclined to have a spiritual experience, don't wait around. It's waiting for you. Just got to make a few changes, some small changes. It wouldn't even have to be massive. You don't have to sell your business and start traveling doing kirtan. But some small changes in health, in how you acquire wealth and what you do with it, in your spirituality, in your relationships. You focus in these four areas and make small tweaks, then you're going to start seeing massive changes. So that's my encouragement.
I like how you said on the way here, you said, everyone's always just a few decisions away from completely changing their life.
Yeah.
What does it be, the trajectory that they're going to move in? What does it be of a whole renovation of their life?
You're a testament to that. You know, you came from monkhood, made changes, some of them big, some of them small, and you're showing so many people a life that can be fulfilling in spirituality, but also sustainable. And I think that's incredible, bro. Like, I think you're a real role model and I really love you for it. You know, there's so many people that are struggling with the balance between spirituality and materialism and, you know, how to live a balanced life. And you're a great example of that. So kudos, man. I'm proud of you.
I'm humbled to hear that because I'm like, ditto. Well, I feel, especially this relationship we've had for some years, even though we're somewhat close in age, you know, I still very much see you as my big brother because you're so much, I just turned 29.
Wow.
That's sneak peek.
He's young.
Sneak peek. I mean, you know, we're not so different,
he's almost 30.
You know, we are close enough in age, but you've always been so many steps ahead in various areas that I'm looking for. And I very much look up and idolize many of the things that you do. And so thank you for your kind words. And they're empowering, don't get me wrong. And it's just, again, this is the mood of a spiritual practitioner. It's just where you can have everything, but still you give credit where credit's due. Not necessarily I deserve the credit, but more or less that whenever you see good in another, you bring it out and you acknowledge it. And as one of my teachers says, what you appreciate, appreciates. Whatever you pay attention to and appreciate, it keeps growing and expanding. And, you know, you it takes practice to say, okay, there's good here, let's find it. And you can either be like the fly who goes and finds, you know, it's always attracted to shit.
Yep.
Or you go and be a honeybee that goes and finds the nectar, the pollen. And, you know, you've, thank you for saying that. And it's indicative of one with the spiritual practice to be able to do that. You alluded to this earlier. It's like, be personal with people, connect with people on a specific level, and actually being present with them means you'll appreciate them.
Yeah.
It's, you can't be around humans and have a heart to heart without actually saying, wow, you are gifted by God in your own awesome or strange, unique way. Probably a combination of strange and unique, you know? And it leads me to wonder how you define the word success, because if we were to take those categories you use, which those listening, you know, we refer to these all the time, health, wealth, spirituality, and relationships, which are kind of big buckets that encapsulate the important things of life.
Mm.
Anyone would look at you and say, okay, this guy has done it. And they could take different angles to say how you're successful, but how do you define success?
I'm going to give you a cliche answer, and I'm going to give you something for you and your audience to think about. The cliche answer, and the one that is very common, is finding a level of contentment, to be happy with what you've been given and not always chasing, but being content. I think that's success. And that's a very common, that's something you get Tony Robbins to say on it, maybe, or I don't know. What's the other one? Oprah Winfrey. She might say that. but here's one that I just received a couple of days ago that I think is superbly and profoundly deep. To not see any service as beneath you.
Mm. Say it one more time, please.
Success. I'm getting a little bit proud here. Success means to not see any service as beneath you. Let me tell you a little bit about that. If you want to be good at marketing, then don't see Instagram posting as beneath you. You know, don't be like, no, I'm too good for that. I don't want to do that. No, do the service. That's what's required. If you're going to be aiming for becoming a humble person this lifetime, then again, don't see any service that's given to you by God, by others, to serve God as beneath you. And that, I think, is success.
I can't drop this mic because I break it, but I would if
Tom, who's in the other room.
Yeah, our producer might be bummed, but if I could drop the mic, here, I'm dropping it for those of you guys not watching. I dropped it. I love how both those definitions are interconnected, because it's like, if you do that, if you see no services below you, then you will in turn be happy and content in your life and in turn feel some success. Yeah. And so those two definitions, they fit so perfectly. Mm-hmm. And you have the qualification to actually say that, my friend, because
I mean,
there's just so many of us, I say, because I'm in this category of those who are just inspired by the work you're doing in this world and get to see. And again, I'm so stoked that I've gotten to see a little bit of that progression. Some people might come in and just, they step right into the sunlight. They're like, whoa, you know, I've gotten to see how, as the sun starts to creep over the horizon and become a full, I'm like, wow. And I'm so grateful I've gotten to know who you are as an individual, and I've had so much trust and faith and appreciation of you for so long. And I'm so relieved that so many other people are getting to have such a positive experience from you and the transformation that you're allowing them to have doing the extensive work that you have. And everyone knows this, I say this, because if I ever endorse something, it means I mean a lot. I mean, we reject ads-based. I mean, we've only accepted like two ad spaces, and it was only because I was like, I totally believe in them. And so those listening, you know, I don't endorse things that I don't appreciate, but I don't care where in the world you are going to book a ticket for a Radhika Das concert, Kirtan concert, whether you have to go to London. If you're in London, you lucked out. Otherwise, you know, here we're in Los Angeles, you know, you're just in New York.
I'm focusing on five main places: London, New York, LA, Mumbai, and Berlin. And if you're not in those places, I'm really sorry. I'm just, otherwise I'm like too little butter on too much toast. But I'm giving my best.
So, I mean, these are great places. Everyone, you guys want to go there, pick one, go there. And even in the meantime, I want you to find Radhika on all platforms. And again, I listen to his kirtans. I am a professional musician that leads kirtan around the world. I listen to your kirtans.
Wow.
Because, like, on the way
what
here.
An honor.
On the way here, because I'm so enlivened by them. Because again, you just imbibe a nice, simple approach to it. It's still beautiful to listen to. It's curated properly. Well, properly, I should say. It's curated
to your taste.
Beautifully. It's curated beautifully. And it's just, it's fun. It's fun. You got meditative ones. You got lively ones for whatever mood one wants to imbibe. Help me and our listeners understand what's the best way for them to listen to what you do, to join you for your retreats, to get an experience with kirtan with you.
www.radhikadas.com.
That's
radhikadas.com.
I can't wait for others, for those who aren't already familiar with you, to get to listen to this, because it's just, especially if you're already familiar with kirtan, you're like, yeah, I get it. Of course, probably everyone knows you. If they know kirtan, they know you because of what you're sharing. If you don't, it's, you provide such a great access point. As somebody who also has a bunch of kirtan, I'm like, better you go to Radhika, because especially the quality recordings and the quantity
like,
and the
like,
long ones.
This guy's like, honey,
it's
man.
Like, I have Madhu.
Sweet.
That's
there
the reason my teacher gave me the word, the name Madhu. You know, try to be sweet. At least try to serve in that way. And so, you know, we were just on a podcast together, on your podcast. How can someone listen to your?
Everything's on YouTube, Spotify, all the major places.
So if they go to Radhika Das, if they go to Radhika Das, they'll be to find your podcast
find
as well, which is great. We had a wonderful conversation on that last talk that we had for yours. And I can't wait to have so many conversations personally as well as recordings like this. And
bless
just from the bottom
friendship.
Of my heart.
Bless me with your
oh,
friendship.
You stuck with me. You know that. You've known that for 12 years, brother. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing what you do. Thank you for sharing with me. Thank you for sharing with others. And I can't wait to do this forever.
Lots of love, man. Lots of love.
So again, if you enjoy these topics and want to explore them deeper, join our Conscious Success community, where we not only go far deeper into them, but you can connect with other like-minded individuals. You can join our Conscious Success community at the link in our show notes below. And I really do hope to see you there.